You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live to the cosmos from the backyard at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Good morning to all in this fine April 1st. A cool, a brisk afternoon broadcasting live from Roberta's, as the gentleman said before me. I don't know who that was. On the Heritage Radio Network, my name is Jason Colucci, and this is The Morning After. Follow us on Twitter, the Jason Colucci, or check in on The Morning After fan page on Facebook, like everyone else. Everybody went live on Facebook on March 30th. Hope everybody was ready for that. We have some pretty full studio today. I'm looking, panning left to right. Guest today, Jim Munson, founder of Brooklyn Roasting Company. To his immediate left, Emily Shepherd, director of sales in studio. And Caroline Mack and Antonio Ramos of Brooklyn Soda Works. I'm self-titling this the Brooklyn Show. I'm going to go out on a limb here. And actually, it was funny. I didn't, you know, I met everybody here briefly before. And when you do, you know, podcasts, radios, kind of work, people don't, somebody, is there flying a plane in here or something? Anybody hear that? No. Sometimes people don't do the research, so I was going to, like, pretend to do my really Brooklyn-y accent, but I'm going to scratch that now and have a big April Fool's joke here. One of the cool things about being at Roberta's in the spring and summer is it brings out all the restaurant people that hide. Brad McDonald, Ann Saxelby, Patrick Martins, and the guy from the Scolium Project, I don't know who he was. It wasn't Abe Schoner. It was somebody else that was here. He was actually on Patrick Martin's show. I don't know if Jesse, I can't read your lips from here, but you can cue into one of the microphones. The gentleman, I have his picture. I don't know his what his name.
Wait, Darren or?
Darren was here. Yeah. Darren was here. Everybody was kind of hanging out. And that's one of the cool things about being at Roberta's here on Sunday. Well, Roberta's at any time is it kind of brings together all of the movers and shakers of the food industry, not people that you would necessarily see on crappy networks like the Food Network or whatever that other their other derivatives channel they have. I want to congratulate my friend Brad McDonald. That Airbus 360 just flew over us, I see. Yeah. Shut up. Okay, cool. on his new spot, Grand Electra, I believe is the name of it, and it is in Dumbo, and it opens, I think, at 5 o'clock Monday through Friday. Weekends at 6 o'clock Monday through Friday, 5 o'clock Saturday and Sunday. Go check that out. His new Mexican spot. These are the people that brought you Colony. Wanted to thank that. Does everyone in New York City have a vitamin D deficiency? You know, I had a doctor's appointment
yes,
this morning.
Yes, I do.
Everyone does.
I think
for most semi-healthy people here, I feel like it's sort of a talking point in New York for your doctor to tell you have a vitamin D deficiency, because everyone does. And as an Italian-American that grew up in Staten Island like 2 years ago, I thought if I went to a tanning salon, it kind of can kind of fix that. But apparently it doesn't. You have to sort of you have to take a supplement if you want to like beat that. But last summer, I made a friend who had a Hamptons house, and I was out there all the time, and I really wanted to have a doctor's appointment just to see my vitamin D levels really high, but I really didn't have to go to the doctors at that point. Daniel Hume, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, who was nominated for Chef of the Year of the Morning After Award. These are the guys that had EMP 11 Madison Park, bought out Danny Meyer, and opened their new place called The Nomad. They put out a video on Eater, which was kind of a Goodfellas-esque, you know, the Scorsese shot where they go into the back of the Copacabana, they go through the kitchen, they follow everybody through. And it's not that, it's kind of cool that they came up with this idea, but it's not that cool, like, because it's like, whatever, but it made me think of something of like how different the restaurant industry is from then and now, because they do the same things. Like, for example, he walks into the the Airbus is flying up again. he walks into the restaurant. Let me play the music in the background here. You can check this out on eater.com. See if it pulls up here. All right, here we go. Here's the music. So yeah, all right, so they're walking into the back.
What's up, man? Good to see you.
Hi, Chef. How are you?
Good to see you.
It was very, hey,
very atmospheric.
Hey, how's it going, guys? What's up? Oh! But he walks into the back. And it's totally cool video, but you can't get away with this crap anymore. The coat check girl, he hands her the coat, he kisses her. I see a sexual harassment suit right there. He walks into the kitchen. He doesn't really do any work. And then he walks out and he drinks. As cool as this video is, this part of the industry doesn't exist anymore. I know it's sort of like just having fun with it. I just wanted to bring that up because it's kind of sad. I wish, one of the regrets of me being in the industry is I wish I was in the 80s of the restaurant industry where, things were, working at Maxwell Plums or something. Where are we at here? Easter Sunday, next week.
2012.
Oh, we're in 2012. Streaming now. Hey, did you check out that thing I... Yeah, you didn't. We'll talk about it later.
Don't put me on the spot.
I'm going to go into... We've been talking about this for weeks. This Agent Olive clip. We interviewed somebody who is the insider at Olive Garden. She's a server at the Olive Garden. We called her Agent Olive. And I kind of interviewed her a few weeks ago. She talks briefly about what it's like to work there. I'm going to play this now, and we're going to take a break. I'm going to come back. I'm going to talk to our guests. Here we go. This is our interview with Agent Olive at the Olive Garden.
Agent Olive is an insider into the inner workings of Olive Garden. Decided to go anonymous because of their stringent policy of people speaking outside. I'm right now, Agent Olive, I'm looking at your menu. What's this $12.95 three-course thing all about? How do you make money on that?
Well, you don't. You don't make money on it. Really, it's hard to make money on anything there unless you can upsell a lot. But
ooh, upsell.
It is a three-course meal, which basically they've just taken like a few menu items, jazzed them up, and then given you the option to have a free dessert. That's pretty much it. Because all of the menu items come with super salad, but this one, they just add the dessert.
When you say upsell,
but they make it sound like...
When you say upsell, does that mean that you get a free t-shirt or something if you upsell? Like, because I was at...
Yeah,
I was
that's what it means.
I was at this annoying restaurant, which is not really known yet, but it will probably be on TV pretty soon the other day, which is called the Bonefish Grill, for whatever reason I was there. And like... I just feel so bad because you're a server at Olive Garden, right, Agent Olive?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the continental United States, Agent Olive works in an Olive Garden, and you sit down, and it just creates tension at the table. I mean, I don't know the people you're serving, but I'm sure you get normal people every once in a while, and your whole shtick is you're like selling cars. Is that true?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm required to greet the table, every table after 4 o'clock with a bottle of wine, no matter what. And ask them to, if they want a sample.
Is it Fetzer?
Considering where I serve, like, there are a lot of people who are a little bit more on the conservative side who kind of get offended. So you're basically...
Well, wait, you're giving your area away. People can narrow this down to the Bible Belt or somewhere.
Sorry. I think it'll be safe. I'm safe.
No specifics, Agent Olive. No specifics on this one. So yeah, you go over and wait. And what if people like don't even drink? Like, that's kind of like a weird. I mean, I could see bringing over like a dessert table or something like that. But like somebody just could be like, hey, you want some wine?
Yeah, because their whole thing is that it's part of the genuine Italian dining experience.
Oh yes, totally. I wish when I see commercials like that, I wish that there was like a Jesse Jackson equivalent for Italian Americans to boycott Olive Garden because there's no like you go on you're watching TV and it's like the most racially stereotyped kind of thing. It's like, oh, we're Italian people. Let's go to the Olive Garden and eat pasta. Yeah. Are there any Italian people that go eat at your restaurant ever? I mean, maybe.
No, not often.
So there's never...
There's also a lot of really good, like, authentic Italian restaurants in my area, so...
Oh, okay.
They're going there.
So I've been instructed to ask you about soup, salad, and breadsticks. Is that, like, the unlimited amount of breadsticks? Like, isn't there some kind of shtick with that?
Well, at lunchtime it's like $6.95, and at dinner time it's $9.95. Ooh. But I guess the thing that people don't know about it is that the servers are actually doing all of the work. So we make the salads, we do the soups, we do the breadsticks. Like, we're baking the breadsticks ourselves. So not only do you have, like, a bunch of different tables that are all eating it at different times, you're just, like, constantly running back and forth, refilling soup and salad, refilling breadsticks. And our thing is that the first basket of breadsticks can be the number of people at the table plus one. So if you have three people at a table, they get four breadsticks at the beginning. But then after the first basket, they only get three. So, of course, like, you've given them this, like, little extra, and then they expect that. So when they get the next basket and there's only three breadsticks, and they're like, oh, what's going on here? Like,
are you serious?
So
that's
just
horrible.
Like, constantly running back and forth, just refilling these breadsticks. And then at the end of the meal, their bill is $7, you know, and it's an appropriate tip is, like, what, like $1, $1.50? So you just work so much harder for so much less. It's very frustrating.
And now, you know, that's a very long interview I do. It goes about 15 minutes, and we'll play a little more maybe in the next few weeks. You know, I don't want legal too much to jump on us. That's Agent Olive. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to Jim Munson, founder of Brooklyn Roasting Company, Emily Shepherd here, director of sales. We're going to talk about a little experience we had there yesterday. I loved it. Love this coffee. Morning after.
Brooklyn at, we're Brooklyn at, we're Brooklyn at, we don't do it like this. That's how you ready. Check it. I got seven back. Even if you had MC Hammer and them 357, Biggie Small, the millionaire, the mansion, the yacht, the 2 weed spots, the 2 hot blocks. That's how I got the weed spot. I shot dread in the head, took the bread and the lamb spread. Little daddy got the shotty to your body, so don't resist or you might miss Christmas. I told, I make number runs. I give MCs the runs dripping. When I throw my clip in the, I slay from far away. Everybody hit the D-E-C-K. My slow flow's remarkable. Peace to Mateo. Now we smoke weed like Tony Montana sniffed the yayo. That's crazy blunts. Bad health. My voice excels.
This program was sponsored by White Oak Pastures. The Harris family has lived and farmed White Oak Pastures for 145 years. They are committed to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. Their mission? We take care of the land and the herd, and they take care of us. For more information about their cattle and their farm, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
We're back here. Biggie, Biggie, Biggie. I think he's coming up on his anniversary or something. Oh, Biggie, because I tweeted this thing out, El Comandante. You could see it in fourth grade, a big mural of Biggie. Jim Munson is in the studio, a native of Iowa. He came to New York, one of his first ventures in New York City, being part of the Brooklyn Brewery team. His career ventured further, operating in the coffee industry. His new endeavor now is Brooklyn Roasting Company in a loft in Dumbo, the size and scope that would make even Julian Schnabel jealous in 1985. Their focus, as far as I'm concerned, is just solid coffee. And you guys can talk about, you know, where it comes from and everything. I'm just happy to be here. Thank you for hosting us yesterday. I had a great time.
No problem.
Now, you have an illustrious career. You came here in, was it the early 90s? When was it?
I came here in 1990, and I wouldn't say it was illustrious.
But
the parts we're not going to talk about today.
Yeah, exactly. But you kind of, when we talked, you've touched a lot of people, exactly. In terms of this, but in terms of where the focus is now, it seems like everything kind of came together where you are now.
I came to New York thinking that I was going to be in the publishing business, and quickly wound up driving a beer van. And I worked for the first 2 years with some great folks at the Brooklyn Brewery in the early 90s, delivering beer to all the supermarkets in New York City. And from there, graduated to a 10-year career with the brewery that was great. I worked with many of the best restaurants in the city and really got my feet wet in the very professional restaurant industry.
Yeah, now, you know, anyone that's listening that hears about the six points of the world and everything, Brooklyn Brewery, as much as a mainstay it is now, was definitely a grassroots company.
Yeah, we were it was pretty gritty back in the, I mean, it was one van. We had one van. There was really no good beer scene in New York City at the beginning of the 1990s. Sam Adams was considered really an out there beer and pretty recent introduction in New York. So I would sell one case at a time. There were days that we would sell 5, 6, 7 cases of beer. We didn't take a single order for the first year that we were in business. It was all sold off the truck. So it was pretty. Old West.
Do you see any now having the coffee company? Do you see any parallels in terms of starting a business?
You know, I joke with people that I went to sleep with a beer in my hand and woke up to the smell of coffee.
You told me that.
And, I think there are a lot of parallels. The beer business really went through a huge resurgence in the early and mid '90s, similar to what has happened in the coffee business in the last 4 or 5 years in New York and, you know, 10 years across the nation. So there have been a lot of similarities in terms of starting a business. Yeah, it's knocking on doors, it's providing customer service, it's making sure that the coffee that we brew tastes great.
Now, there was we went to the location, which is in Double. What's the exact address?
25 J Street. Please visit us.
And you can not only can you kind of go there and have coffee like any other place. This is actually an adventure. You know, I recommend doing it, because we went there yesterday. We had a bunch of coffee, and there's a whole other side. There's a roulette table there. There's no gambling going on, but I had so much fun, and as somebody who has a red eye every morning, I have to vouch for this coffee, because I would totally not say anything if I didn't have any effect of it, but it had such a clean caffeine kind of like high to it. Like I had it, and I kind of like went into it, and I didn't have any anxiety or anything. I know some people have coffee and they get kind of freaked out. Like, it was such a great afternoon, and I only had about 3 sips of an espresso.
That's the other special ingredient we bring in from Colombia.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Bolivia, Colombia.
April Fools.
But it had the bouquet sort of aspect of it. You could talk about it now. I can't sort of articulate coffee bouquets just as much as wine. But I can say how I feel after I have coffee. And some people like a little boost of something. And I didn't have a panic attack on the F train as well. You know, it felt good. Can you talk about when you're buying coffee, is it just about sort of the flavor profile, or is it also about the effect afterwards?
It's pretty much, I mean, purchasing coffee for us is pretty serious business, and we look at it across the spectrum. Part of it is about the flavor in the cup, and we do a lot of exhaustive tastings before the coffee shipped to us. We get pre-shipment samples, and we're cupping it. It's also whether or not the coffee is grown in a sustainable manner, conscientious sourcing, all that stuff. So flavor and, I would say, food politics also plays into it.
And to your left is Emily.
That's right, the lovely Emily Shepherd.
And Emily, you're a conscious effort of like the wholesale operation. What are some of the like, if I was a restaurateur and wanted to contact you or anything, what do I need to do?
You would call me, or
in the sense of sort of setting, I call you, and do I get, you know, do you guys offer the machine like lease kind of deal, or is it just buying the beans? I guess what I'm saying.
It's everything. Coffee is so much more than just buying the beans.
Yeah.
Essentially, you know, Jim was just talking about the beer industry. There's one brewer at the Brooklyn Brewery, whereas with coffee, every single person becomes a brewer. So educating people about brewing techniques and teaching people about where the coffee is from and what they're drinking, It's so much more than just about selling beans. It's about the service of the entire thing. And we can help everything from purchasing equipment to finding the perfect fit for what kind of an experience or coffee experience you're trying to give your customer.
And how did you get involved with the project?
Jim and I...
Roommates? Was it roommates?
Yeah.
Roommates.
Do you own that place in Williamsburg?
I lived on 10th in Bedford for 17 years, and at one point, Emily became my roommate, and I was just starting the business, and she seemed fantastic and had a great palate, so she became basically my first employee in exchange for some free rent.
Indentured
and from
servitude.
There, the rest is history.
Indentured servitude with some squatting. Yeah, you own that. You actually own that building now.
A little bit of that.
Now you're renting it out. No, we kid. But you, there's the roasting, everything, the processing, the canning. What is there's that draconian, like huge canning, that huge canning.
We're very part, like, a big part of what we do.
I expected Juan Valdez to show up. As bad right. as that is to say, now
we keep him in the back.
Jet.
Actually, the place that we're located at 25J did used to be home to the old stables for the original Brooklyn, an original Brooklyn company, Arbuckle Brothers, 120 years ago. So that was there where they kept the horses when they delivered coffee back at in the late 1800s. But I guess some of the things that we're doing to really try to be sustainable, get rid of paper waste, save energy. Our roaster is very fuel efficient. It gives us a lot of fine-tuned control over roasting profiles, but it also uses about 80% less energy than the average coffee roaster of the same size. And we're, as you mentioned, very happy to introduce our new 1956 Panama Continental Can Company can seamer, which is allows us to package coffee.
Check it out, right next to the roulette table.
It's 60 years old, but it runs like a deer, as they say. But it's a very it gives us the ability to package fresh roasted cans with valves on the top for super freshness, and it's cool. It saves, people can refill the cans, doesn't waste paper. Tin steel is the most recyclable packaging material in the country because it can be separated by magnets.
So I'm going to ask you about two roasts. Just a general everyday roast that you guys offer. What do you recommend?
All our coffees are special, Jason. We don't have just an everyday roast.
You can't pick your children, but apparently it's April 1st, and you guys are you're offering decaf today.
Right, that's our April Fool's joke. It's only decaf. We have a really nice coffee in our Mocha Java, which is a blend of.
And I'm trying to cater to your Dumbo fam, your Dumbo, parents. There's like, it's sort of like the, it's like kind of like Park Slope over there, except they hide them in those huge lofts.
There is a little bit of that. Right. We do a lot of business with there are a lot of new tech companies over there too, but it's we're very happy with the roast that we sell to a lot of places. It's a blend of East African coffee and Sumatra coffee, Mocha Java. That's something that people should keep their eyes out for.
So you're gonna hang out for our panel later?
Absolutely.
I'm gonna have the Shark Tank. You guys are gonna pitch me ideas, and I'm gonna see if I'm gonna invest in them. Kidding around. No, but you talk about tech. Who's up? Is Foursquare over there? Kickstarter is in the Lower East Side, I think. But like, technology area.
We do coffee. I mean, yesterday we were delivering coffee to Etsy. The New York Foundation for the Arts is across the street. Slow Foods headquarters are across the street. Although I think they might be moving. POV is over there. There's lots of cool companies.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to Laura Wirtz, our friend from 86list.com. We're going to get to the bottom of this whole Brooklyn Soda Works thing. I'm tasting it right now. I'm loving it. Morning After.
Black cup of coffee.
We're back. The Morning After. Very feisty coffee crew over there. I'm gonna see if I'm gonna invest in their projects later when I do the Shark Tank. Morning After, we'll talk to Laura Wirtz at 86list.com if she's not sleeping. Oh wait, she's awake today.
I am awake today.
Alright, 1 second, Laura Wirtz. Let the Bone Thugs and Harmony do their thing. And it is officially the first of the month. It is April 1st. Laura Wirtz, 86list.com with the hot job of the week. Laura Wirtz, what is going on in the job market? It is spring. People are hiring.
That is correct. We have an exciting job today. The hot job comes from the Treats Truck.
What? Can so you spell trade
truck? They are a food truck dedicated to sweets, like cookies and brownies.
Okay, I've seen them.
Okay. However, they are preparing to open a brick-and-mortar location in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn. So they are seeking cafe managers, a cafe chef, counter people, and a full or part-time baker. Ideal candidates will have strong customer service skills, and food handler's licenses, of course, a plus.
Can you be more specific about that whole brick-and-mortar thing? I don't know what that means. Is that a building?
Yeah, okay. They're actually opening a location on 9th Street. So, you know, instead of having to follow them on Twitter and find out where they're going to be so you can get your favorite treats, you'll know how to find them.
What's going on with you? We missed you last week. I understand there were some difficulties with your phone or something. I don't know if you were sleeping or what was going on. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. it was a rough weekend for me.
it was a rough weekend. LauraWorks86List.com. Any other sort of stuff going on in the job world?
Let's see. I don't know. You know what?
There
are looking for servers if they have outdoor seating. They are looking to stock up, so
I have some,
if you're looking for a server job, I think those are good places to hit right now.
I have something funny to play. There's actually, you know, this eHow stuff, you always see it. Eater actually has, like, sometimes they have, like, you know, people are looking for jobs, or maybe they want to teach people how to make cocktails. You can go and do this eHow thing, and you get... Now, eHow has a how to get a job, how to correctly answer restaurant interview questions. Do you want to hear it?
Oh, let's hear it.
All right, hold on. Let me play it right now.
Talk about how to conduct and how to correctly answer restaurant interview questions.
Oh, she sounds like...
So if you are interviewing for a job
like
in a restaurant,
she's talking about.
These types of questions are going to be uniquely developed for restaurant work.
Get your pen and paper out,
people listening.
So if you've
had restaurant experience
okay, I'm
before, that's
going
to help you. But there are some basic things that everyone should know, whether it be a restaurant interview or an interview with another company. You would want to dress professionally. You would want to demonstrate good posture. You want to make sure that you go in with clean nails and clean haircut, and that you are carrying your resume, that you have a very firm handshake.
She does. She's not the HR person that Roberta is, apparently.
So as they sit you down, and oftentimes a restaurant interview is in the restaurant, so then you would be across the booth or maybe in a side office with the restaurant manager.
Side office?
So the types
if they have
of
an office.
Questions that you would be asked is, tell me about your restaurant experience. If you have a resume, then you want to be reflective of the type of restaurant experience that you've had. Always be as professional about the restaurant experience that you've had. Never ever speak poorly of a restaurant that you've worked in before. Talk about your strengths and your attributes and your qualifications. If there is a specific type of restaurant experience that you've had, you might want to speak to that. If you really enjoy working with the customers, then you want to have an example. Not just say, I enjoy working with customers, but I really enjoy interacting with the customers and making them feel like they've had an excellent experience when they come into our restaurant.
I think you should post a link to that on 86list.com. She's this lady obviously knows what she's doing. How I don't get this. Laura Wirtz, have a good week. We'll check in with you next week, 86list.com. Thank you. I hope you're taking notes on that. You can sort of, you know, relay that to your people.
I did. I'm bookmarking that page right now.
Have you tried the Brooklyn Soda Works? Have you ever tried this?
I have not. I've not had a chance to try it.
Well,
I have seen it, though.
Well, I want you to listen to an interview, and I want you to try some of their stuff and some of the locations they offer it in, and I want to see your receipt. Talk to you soon. LauraWorks86.com.
Okay.
Thanks again.
All right. Take care, Jason. Bye.
I'm sitting to my right is the Brooklyn Soda Works, Caroline Mack, Antonio Ramos. Brooklyn Soda Works was formed in early 2010 by an artist and a chemist couple living in Brooklyn, New York. They started by experimenting with ginger beer and moved on to more adventurous fruit combinations. Their business has grown over the past 2 years, and they are servicing some of New York City's top establishments like Blue Hill. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you for having us.
First of all, I tried the apple ginger, and this is sort of the staple.
Yeah, it's kind of our flagship flavor.
Is that sort of just how you, because I know ginger was sort of like a major inspiration on the business concept, but did it sort of, was it de facto that it went to this, or is this something that you guys did first and it kind of worked itself out?
We try to work ginger into as many flavors as we possibly can, while we do try to do, you know, go the whole local route.
We love ginger, so.
No, but if you do any research, ginger is like the first thing on the company. Ginger was like the first thing that comes up. Isn't that sort of how the company came about first?
Yeah, we were trying to make the perfect ginger beer. We were trying to make the world's best dark and stormy. And we decided that we would make the best ginger beer. Well, we tried to anyway. So that's that's like that's the starting story, and I think we're going to stick with that.
Why is it Dr. Stormy? Did you guys go to school in New England or something? I mean, like, why was it just, is it your favorite cocktail? Or because that's just interesting to me.
No, that's not even our favorite cocktail. We just thought it would be a good one to start with, like a mixer that we could actually make for ourselves.
Because that's really one of the things most bars will stock.
Yeah.
And separately, you know, rum and coke, obviously Coca-Cola and stuff like that. But ginger beer, it can go in, you know, any direction. Mm-hmm. And places, you know, they sort of feature it. I know Prune has a really good, I frequent Prune. They have a Dark and Stormy on there. I'm not sure which one. I think they use that Regatta crap, ginger beer. But now, you guys are at sort of like year two, if I'm correct, or year three maybe.
Yeah, year two.
And things are established, mm-hmm. or, you know, some seasonal employees and stuff. How do you guys feel about the business at this point?
Really good. We are actually moving into an 1,800 square foot space this weekend and the following week. So we've been building that out for the past week. It's been a lot of hard work, a ton of blood, sweat, and tears. But yeah, we're at that next stage. 1,800 square foot commercial space over the border of Bushwick and Bed-Stuy. And we're expanding our wholesale accounts. So we're amping everything up. Everything from our retail locations, which are, you know, the weekly Brooklyn Flea and Smorgasburg, et cetera, to we're hoping to work with additional restaurants and bars. So, you know, we started with Blue Hill and we've expanded, and we're really, really excited to be working with some of the restaurants and bars that we have been working with. It's been, I think, the favorite. My favorite pie, anyway.
Yeah, we just delivered a keg to Egg's new project, Parish Hall, and we love eating brunch over there, and really happy to be working with those guys. So the whole idea of this kitchen space is to supply our wholesale operations, which we're trying to grow quite a bit.
One thing I really respected of doing research with you guys were I think Danny Myers, people contacted you. I don't know where you guys are in terms of, you know, working with their restaurants, but, mm-hmm. you know, at a certain point in time, they contacted you for that new Whitney project.
Yeah.
And you know, as much as you would love to sort of get, you know, get in bed with all the other restaurants, you were like, hey, listen, we can only facilitate this place at this point in time. As business owners, I really respected that because you kind of knew where you guys were. A lot of places might jump the gun and sort of jump and, you know, say, oh, we can do all the, you know, these, we can do all the Shake Shacks. Oh, sure. Well, you know, we'll do the one here. Is that sort of just, you guys are just on top of things, or is that a conscious thing?
It's a conscious thing. We've always wanted to grow the business sustainably as opposed to quickly. So, you know, to jump in with all the Danny Meyer restaurants at once and deliver a product that maybe isn't of the quality that we want, we would lose that account completely. So, you know, we want to start with what we can handle and be very careful about delivering a very high quality product and grow sustainably and at a rate where we can control the quality.
And also, you know, our price point is one that's reflective of the ingredients that's in that. So we want to make sure that we're providing the best possible thing. And if we can only provide, you know, 20 restaurants this year or, you know, 60 the next year, then that is a limit. We want to make sure that every single place we're working with gets the best of what we can offer.
No, but just in a society, as American society, as things are just like sort of thing people think, especially in technology based kind of ideas and stuff, people think things can pop overnight. There really needs to be a natural progression over a few years, build a brand. One thing just personally I wanted to ask you, especially you, Antonio, a lot of people here, especially at Heritage, a lot of people that listen to the show balance something else. And I know you have another career. I don't want to get into that. But I know you have, you know, you have two loves in your life. I mean, how do you balance out having a small business and also having, you know, a 9-to-5 kind of job?
Well, yeah, both of us still have careers that we love and do, and it's hard. Caroline's an artist, I'm a chemist, yes. And we both, I mean, that's not like, you know, it's not like working in an office and we, you know, are glad to throw off the 9-to-5. This is like things that we love to do, and the soda thing is something else we love to do, so it can be a hard balance, yeah.
Does the business strengthen your relationship, just... I mean, I don't know if it's off topic, but no.
It's a totally valid question.
That's a good question.
It is. All I want to know is who gets the apple ginger in the divorce. That's all. I'm kidding around, but it makes when there's a common goal in a relationship, especially as a passion project, it strengthens it. I've
Yeah, it's been a really fun journey. You know, I won't say it's been like easy the entire way, but we both love food and we both love making things. Ever since we were teenagers, if we wanted to do something, we would make it ourselves. If it wasn't there, we couldn't purchase it, then we would try to figure out how to solve the problem ourselves. So something that the two of us have in common.
Yeah, and until now, I've been making chemicals and she's been making art, and so it's really cool. It's been great for us to make something together, and we're really happy about that.
And we talked about this out in the green room, if you will, about you're a chemist, and how sort of the trial and error aspect translates well to developing products.
Yeah, the sort of basic scientific method.
Do you take that same kind of lab kind of expertise to it, or you just have fun? You know.
I mean, this is obviously a lot more loose and no one's definitely more fun, right? You know, a mistake if I mix apple with, you know, something it doesn't taste good with is no big deal. But yeah, it's the same idea of having ideas and then trying them out and working through why it didn't work, what can we do to make it work. That the sort of methodical approach to things that has carried over from the chemistry, and I think it's been a big help.
Yeah. And I think also the thing that Antonio is very good at is working how to scale upwards. At the point we're at now, we're looking to purchasing much larger equipment on the scale of a small brewery. So at that point, we're trying to figure out if you go up to this many hundreds of gallons, how do you not lose the integrity of the project of the product? Because making something a small batch, you can do it fairly easily, but once you scale up 100 times, how do you keep that the same delicious flavor profile? What if you scale up 1,000 times? How do you do that? And then that's something that Antonio is, I think, specifically good at.
Yeah, I always feel that when you watch that show, How It's Made, when it was like, you know, there's always that one guy that's a project manager and he's like really happy that a camera crew showed up in Nebraska he's like throwing chemicals in. It's like, whoa, I was like, what if that guy just shows up hammered one day and like the entire American Lando Lakes cheese gets messed up? You guys going to hang out for our final little panel
here?
We're
going
to talk. Let's talk small businesses. Jessie Kiefer, she's going on vacation next week. She's going to come in. We'll all talk. We'll hang out. This is the morning after. We'll take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to all of our guests. You know, see what's going on. Morning after. Well, the kids are all hopped up and ready to go. They're ready to go now. The guys been surfing and they're going to the discotheque. Ho, 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 ho. I'm back. Jessie Kiefer, everybody in studio. All right, we're back in our last segment here. You know, we have it's Easter Sunday next week. Dr. Jack Inslee, we may or may not do the show, right?
I don't know. If Christ rises again, I don't know if I can really show up to work.
Okay, cool. So if I see unicorns outside my house, we may or may not have a show.
Correct.
Okay, cool. Sorry, I was raised Roman Catholic. Sin that I said that. It actually is Palm Sunday today, which is cool. You know, if you're creative, you can kind of make those cool little things. I don't know. And if everybody knows what that means, you can kind of make little designs out of the palms. And I think those palms are burnt a year later for Ash Wednesday. I was an altar boy for 4 years. St. Christopher's, shout out. We're in studio here with everybody. I wanted to, you know, one of the things I was really happy about having everybody in studio with, just like kind of small businesses and everything, was just kind of talk about just the mindset of, you know, starting things and branding with technology. For example, like just doing a little thing like the morning after, you know, the idea of Twitter and having a Facebook page and all this stuff, how it's made it easier and so much harder because you kind of have to stay on top of it. You kind of reach out to so many people, but then you have to retweet and stuff. Brooklyn Soda Works, I know you guys have a Twitter account and stuff like that. Are you guys doing your own social media and stuff?
We do, and it's more like when one of us can remember to do it.
Yeah,
we,
exactly.
We're just about to hire our first really great sales manager, and hopefully she'll take on more of that role. But we've also been lucky in that I learned how to use Twitter about a year and a half ago. I'm remarkably behind in this, so I think I was blissfully ignorant that we needed to have all these things. And it's been okay. I don't think you absolutely need to be inundating people with things. I think little bit is okay.
Do you guys have Netflix?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you watched season one of Downton Abbey?
I have.
Okay, cool. Isn't it awesome? Remember the Chris Farley show? Remember that on SNL? Hey man, you like the Beatles music? Yeah. Isn't it cool? Yeah. No, but have you watched? Isn't it the best show ever? I don't know if you tune into the show. I talk about it a lot. Or
yeah,
I know you were born in London. Or
yeah, it's
like
fantastic.
That. It's an amazing show. But getting back to what I was talking to you about, Mr. Munson, which was the I brought it up, which is New York Stories. It's a vignette of three New York filmmakers: Martin Scorsese, Francis Ford Coppola, Woody Allen. The Scorsese one, if you're a Scorsese fan, Nick Nolte plays a artist called Leo, or he's called the Lion. Anyway, he's a famous artist. So it's like the Julian Chanel. Exactly, that's sort of his nickname. Never said. But when I was in your like sort of that loft space, I kind of thought of it. And you talked about old New York and stuff. And sort of talking about branding Brooklyn Roasting Company and doing the letters and things. What do you take into consideration when you're creating a brand that has the name Brooklyn in it?
Well, for us, we're in the coffee business, and the coffee is sourced. We buy coffees from all around the world, and I think that one of the reasons we landed on the idea of Brooklyn Roasting Company, as opposed to some other roasting company, is that Brooklyn drinks a lot of coffee. It's got a rich coffee roasting history, and people from Brooklyn come from all around the world, just like coffee. So there's a really sort of colorful connection between what we sell and where we sell it. Our logo is kind of fun because, from a branding standpoint, the outline of our logo,
I like this.
The outline of the logo stays the same, like the boundaries of the borough of Brooklyn, but. We tell people that what's inside, the color and the character change all the time. So we don't have one color scheme, and we have a lot of fun with branding. And I used to, as a former partner at the Brooklyn Brewery, there was some connection there too. It felt sort of natural to maintain an allegiance to where we were working.
And one of the interesting things, if anyone is on the internet right now, and it goes on Wikipedia as to, Wikipedia Brooklyn people from here, everyone from Norman Mailer to, everyone, if somebody has their roots here, it's crazy how many people are from here. Brooklyn Soda Works, was there a conscious decision to put Brooklyn in the title, or was it just kind of like, hey, whatever, we're here? I just, it's something that interests me.
No, I don't think it was a conscious decision. We're very bad at making up names. We made up a lot of really terrible names, and then we're like, okay, let's just keep it simple. Let's keep it, we wanted it to be about a sense of place, where we are.
But I'm looking at the bottle here, and I like it. It reminds me of something a lot of people don't know about, which is maybe a typewriter. And it's sort of a new courier, but in the traditional sense of new courier, which it came from a typewriter or courier. Was that something you guys were having fun with, or budget kind of kicked in and you were like sort of thinking something last minute? I swear, we did a business cards for the morning after, and they came out great, but it was all about budget. Like, we just didn't have any money, and we just had to be creative about it.
Our design aesthetic is one that's relatively pared down, and actually our roommate she has a really great old typewriter, so she was helping us lay out some of the background, and that's how it came up. And on top of that, we don't bottle on a large scale, so we wanted something that was fairly clean and simple. And also when we started this, we really didn't think that it would grow as quickly as it did. So the label you're looking at now is still the same one that we started with 2 years ago. And it wasn't, to be totally honest, it wasn't done with like a massive amount of like foresight or budget.
No,
but I really do like it.
Are you on season 3 of Downton Abbey yet?
I've actually finished it. I've watched the entire thing.
Oh,
is there
3
seasons or 2?
Well, they're on 2, but they're like in the middle, like on 3 now. I think if you watch Channel 13, I think they're in the middle of 3. But I don't want to know. I'm on season 2, episode 2. They're in the middle of World War 1. I don't want to know what's going on. Jesse Kiefer, what's up? You going on vacation next week? Where are you going?
Yeah, I'm going to Phoenix for one of my best friend from high school and college's wedding. Misty and Brian, congratulations.
Misty and Brian.
They're going to be the Tessers.
Also,
And then because Phoenix is so close to Mexico, we're just using the time that we're there and driving to Rocky Point, which is a place I've been going since I was probably 9. It was like spring break. It's kind of like spring break. Woo!
Is that like if you live in San Diego, you go to TJ, you go to like Tijuana?
Exactly. It's kind of exactly the same. So I'm going down. We're caravanning with my parents, my sister and her 2 kids, and a dog. And I can't wait to help my vitamin D deficiency.
You have it. We all have it here.
We
all suffer. That's going to be scurvy awareness was a huge thing. I'm going to start vitamin D awareness. It's going to be my cause. What else? We have a couple of big guests coming up, excluding the company here. We are all huge guests here in the studio right now, but we like to talk about our future guests here too.
This is going to be like the third time I've plugged Daniel Janus, but we're super excited about him.
We have Hiro Jima's of Sushi.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're playing like a tennis.
Daniel Janus is going to be on.
Daniel Janus, wow, Hiro Jima's of Sushi. We're going to talk about that new documentary. It's playing at the IFC Center, which is like right across the street from the Cage, that basketball place where you might see an NBA player playing there.
Can I put a plug in? You earlier you asked about jobs. We're looking for baristas.
Yeah.
So if anybody's
can you give a
super fantastic double elastic skilled barista that wants to work, and it's a very busy.
How many star tattoos do they have?
They got to have a lot of tattoos. I'm talking ink poisoning, serious tattoos. But mainly, they want to be able to work in a very busy environment and do a great job.
I want to tell one more story, and then Brooklyn Soda Works. We want to talk to them for 2 seconds. They're going to tell us. They're going to give us a plug. You guys going to talk?
Plug. Okay.
Well, you guys just wanted to say something. Oh,
yeah, we're hiring too. We need kitchen people. We got a new big kitchen, and we need more kitchen people.
Can I, as a somebody who is being a procurer of operations, I've done operations. Can you be more specific about kitchen people? Like, just somebody to go in there and cook stuff down? You're looking for chef-driven people, or are you just looking for people to work in the kitchen?
We're looking for people with kitchen experience. But what we are actually doing is you're basically just working with fruit. So a lot of chopping, and then a lot of almost like working in a brewery. A lot of dealing with large amounts of liquid, going from one tank to another, carbonating, stuff like that.
So
but we'll teach you all that.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, and then we also start up this weekend at the very busy Brooklyn Flea in Smorgasburg, so you can also find us there as well.
Can you your Twitter, your Facebook page? We'll start with Brooklyn Soda Works.
Twitter page is BKLYN Soda Works.
Just do what I did. Just type it in Google. You can find all the stuff. Brooklyn Roasting.
And we're at brooklynroasting.com, and I think BKL Wine Roasting on Twitter too. Also, keep your eyes out for the new sweet and creamy steaming milk that we're working on with Bat and Kill Creamery, which is going to be introduced, optimized for espresso based. Beverages.
And I will vouch for the Bat and Kill Creamery, one of New York's most sustainable creameries. You can get that from a few different distributors. I know Farm to Chef Basis distributes that.
Dairy Wagon.
Dairy Wagon gets it. Any good coffee company is using that for their lattes. My name is Jason Kaluji. This is The Morning After. You can follow us at The Jason Kaluji on Twitter, The Morning After page. I want to thank all of our guests here today.
Thanks, Jason.
That was me. You know, those silences are me not saying, I'm trying not to say ah anymore. So those little long silences, 2 second silences, we might see you next week. We might not. Thanks,
great.
Guys.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.